this segment. You can't talk about the death of Stalin without mentioning what we did already talk about earlier, that a lot of the events of this film actually happened, and even like the set pieces, like the orchestra recording Stalin ringing up saying he wanted a recording of it. They weren't recording it, so they had to do it all again. They didn't call a doctor right away when he had a stroke, because the guards at the door were too terrified to go in when they heard heard him fall. His son with the ice hockey team, there was an ice hockey team that did all perish in a plane crash. Most mentionable things. What do we want to cover off here, James? Do you have anything?
I'm trying to think. For me, it's the most mentionable things are there are so many fantastic performances, which feels like such a low stake thing. But it's like that everyone comes into this at the top of their game. It's the kind of thing I love about Iannucci. It's also like the this is going to be a weird parallel, but it's the Fast and the Furious franchise that you never know who's going to walk through the door, but you know they're going to bring it because they all understand what they're in. And there's a real element of that in this film, that like everyone who walks through the door, you're like, oh my God, it's that guy. And he's fantastic.
The concept of people arriving in a Fast and the Furious movie and bringing it, it makes me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
But they do. That's fair. What about you, Kia?
Yeah, a few quick must mentionables. Steve Buscemi's bald head, horrifying.
Oh.
I don't think it's a good look for him. It's truly a startling thing to see. I think one of the all-time great sort of joke runners through this film, them trying to track down the little girl that Stalin posed with in the photo, and bringing in, you know, a series of girls that they're like, oh, these girls look similar. And he's like, no, I want the girl. And so they go to great lengths to bring the girl. And then she's grown up a little and he's like, she looks like a fucking giraffe. Get rid of her. and so then they have to find another girl. And then it's just so good that it just pops up in at all of these high stress moments. They're like, oh, we've found you another child.
Very Veep style.
It's so good.
I feel like I've seen a lot of those similar situations in episodes of Veep. That might even be a good nomination for the next 10 pages, because that just running gag through the funeral, that whole funeral sequence is excellent.
Oh, the bear cub speech. The rehearsal and then performance of the speech of the cubs, the various sects of the Soviet Union, is one of the great, beautiful bit of writing.
Lithuanian cubs.
We are all but cubs. Russian cubs. Georgian cubs. Armenian cubs. Lithuanian cubs. Latvian cubs. Estonian cubs.
Should also mention that the Death of Stalin is actually based on a French graphic novel, which is based on the historical events. And Armando Iannucci specifically said, I'm not going to try to recreate the look of the graphic novel, which I think is a smart choice for a comedy. You don't need to go Frank Miller-esque. Don't try to walk in the same shoes as... What were those movies called? I'm blanking on the name of them.
Oh, Sin City?
City, yeah. That's it. Yeah, where it was like a shot-for-shot remake of the graphic novel. Okay, we're almost done. Smart cuts. This is a new segment, Kia, where we identify things that didn't make the final film that you think was a smart cut.
I thought the smartest cut was there is a character... Lilia, I think you pronounce her name, and you basically see a lot more of Beria's rapes, and I think it would have changed the tone of the film, and I didn't want to see it, I didn't need to see it, and it just meant that there was this, you know, one of the few female characters in the film basically existed to demonstrate his horrible abuse, and I just think that was the right decision to cut that. And I think also in the finished film, they elevated Svetlana a lot more than she is in the screenplay, and she actually has a bit more. She's obviously still at the mercy of these awful men, but she is given a bit more power in the film than is in the screenplay. So I think they were good good changes, good cuts.
It is one of the like the constant, when we're talking about how you pull off this film, it's one of the constant jockeying that I imagine happened all the way through, that was like, how much of the horror do you have to see to reconcile with the horror? Because I feel like you have to pay it its due diligence. This film doesn't work if it is just the fun scenes of the fellas in the boardroom. Like, you need the cars going out to enact the terror, the people scared and like dressing their like when the conductor's being dressed by his wife and he's giving her instructions to deny ever knowing him or hearing anything from him. Like, you need those moments of real horror, because otherwise you're cheapening everything about this. But I think it's such a slight of balance of like, how much of this do we show and how.
I saw an interview where Armando Iannucci talked about that, and because the fact is there are still people in the world who grew up through this time who could potentially see this, and he said you don't want to, you know, you really need to address that, how many people that this time, how many people were killed and displaced and how awful it was. But it's such a high wire act. I don't know, like, I think it comes back to what you said, James, about that only someone like Armando Iannucci could attempt to pull off something like this, because it's still jarring. Yeah. As good as well as successful as it is, it's still jarring to sway between the wacky goofballiness of these bumbling idiots to then like this the montage of people being swept up, and then you know, like in the prison, just go, you're just hearing the constant gunshots. It's still terrible. Trope tally, we might move past that. It doesn't really feel like it applies to this. Final thoughts?
Yeah.
No, not really a trope. It's pretty unique. Final thoughts and comments, James.
Yeah, I think that this is a screenplay that I think there is maybe only a handful of writers where the writer is the star of the screenplay. And this is a real example of it. Iannucci is one of those very few people who it is like the performances are great, the direction is very interesting. It is the rhythm of the writing and the speed at which these things move, the sheer density of gags. Like, it's the writing is king here. And I find that fascinating whenever a writer can pull it off for entirely selfish reasons, but I find that very interesting.
Yeah, you're right. This is a recognizably Iannucci script, even though he shares a credit.
Very much so.
Yeah, how about...
Yeah, poor David Schneider.
I know. Who I didn't realise is the actor from a lot of Alan Partridge projects. He plays the BBC commissioner.
Oh!
I was very surprised. Yeah, the guy, eat my cheese.
I always think of Iannucci as evil Aaron Sorkin, and I feel like this is another example of this.
I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
Kia, any final
thoughts? That's fantastic. Final thought, just a bit of Iannucci trivia that I stumbled across whilst I was reading about this film. When he was in, I think it was Toronto, launching the film at the festival, he put out this tweet saying Trump, it was a movie pitch. He was pitching an idea for his next movie, very much tongue-in-cheek. Trump drugged and moved to a replica White House where he carries on thinking he's governing. Millions spent on hiring actors to play his staff, senators, news anchors, people at rallies. There you go, studios, your highest bid, please. And whilst everyone was at the festival, 12 studios phoned him and made offers on this film.
I would watch Synecdoche White House any minute.
Yes. And he actually engaged. He, you know, he took the calls, took the pitch meetings and was like, well, I mean, if they want it, and then sort of went, no. It's a joke. It was a joke. I'm not going to spend the next 2 years of my life working on this movie.
It is a great pitch, though. So that pitch is available if anyone wants to pick it up and run with it.
Yeah, guess it's public domain now.
I'm going to take away a lesson from this from this episode, James. It is that do not if you're a young writer out there and you know what you want to write as a speculative screenplay, do not tackle subject matter like this. It takes time, and you need to prove yourself and work up to it. Like you're saying, Taika Waititi is another person who can do a Nazi comedy like this. So would you recommend to writers, don't for your first script, go, I'm going to write a wacky comedy about the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah, I feel like that...
Because you're probably not going to pull it off.
That's kind of it. You're like, if you were an aerial skier, you wouldn't go down the big hill on your first run. Like, I feel like take some time to learn your craft. Focus on what you're good at. This is a very, very difficult idea. It is something that frightens me. Like, we've been working for, you know, 5 years now, week in, week out, on making very real and very consequential things funny in a tight turnaround. There's a degree of difficulty that this scares the hell out of me as something that you would want to attempt.
Good lesson for all listening. James Colley, Keir Wilkins, The Death of Stalin, we did it. Lots of fun. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, James.
And no one else coming on this show is allowed to take Wally until you're doing second returns.
Excellent.
Fade to black. The end.